Hey, everybody, welcome to Hammer Down on the Market Scale Network. I'm your host, Mike Bush. I am joined today by actually one of my favorite startups. I got to know these guys a little bit because they're part of one of my favorite incubators. I'm going to say favorite way too many times today. This company is doing cool stuff. They're solving a problem that we kind of all know exists, but they're taking a really interesting approach. The company's name is Lamar IoT. The company's co-founder is Brantley Fulton, and joining him is his guy, Raj Kupinaram. Guys, let's get right into it. Brantley, what is Lamar IoT focused on? What are you doing?
Yes, so we're based right here in Los Angeles, and part of our strategy is we wanted to be around, you know, some of the busiest, most bustling ports in America, and we are a smart asset tracking company. And so to put it in a simple way, we're like the Apple AirTag, but I would like to think of like the souped up version. So we like to think of that as more rudimentary, as like a stripped down version where that is mostly just location tracking. We look at more advanced sensing capabilities. So being able to add in temperature, humidity, shock, corrosion, and all of those things are things that we're able to detect. And then we have some data analytics tools that we're coming up with better predictive models to kind of prevent these excursions while being able to track and trace like the provenance and quality of goods.
Okay, so let me walk this back a little bit to make sure I've got this right. So if I think Apple AirTags, which is I think most folks listening have probably put an AirTag in their luggage to figure out, hey, is it going to get lost, right? Like we've all been through the airport. You're adding more measurements. So you're adding temperature, you're adding velocity, how fast something's moving, humidity. Mm-hmm. Presumably, because AirTags are certainly not cheap as a consumer use case, presumably you're doing this at a lesser cost than an AirTag, and you're approaching shippers or anybody with heavy and high value assets that they've got to move and saying, let me offer you track and trace in a portal of my own building. So you're going to not only know where your stuff is, you're going to know what condition it's in. We're going to basically solve track and trace across the supply chain. Is that right?
That is right. Yes. And it allows us to look at what we like to think of are, you know, these everyday products and everyday goods that, you know, impact people. And for us, when we really, I would say, start to fall in love with the problem of, you know, traceability and how do we track valuable assets, you know, we really start to delve in and look at markets like food and pharmaceutical, where, you know, some of these just critical goods like medicine, you can think vaccines or, you know, your every or, you know, certain diseases, their, you know, drugs need to be temperature controlled. They might need to be frozen or refrigerated before use. If we think of in the grocery store, like the freezer aisles or the refrigerated counter where you buy meat or seafood, those type of things all are very sensitive products, and being able to really know where they come from and the journey that it took for them to arrive at our, you know, grocery stores and pharmacies in good condition, that became really kind of a core to our model, and I would say a core to our business.
So one of the things that I think is really interesting about the business you just laid out is somebody who's moving a vial of medicine, a vial of pharmaceutical, a vial, like a 2-inch vial can be worth millions of dollars, right? When you're talking about the cure for cancer, a potential cure for cancer, that's worth its weight in gold, quite literally, probably way more than gold. You know, I don't know what the next level metal is. And at the same time, I think we've all gone to the grocery store. We've all come home with ice cream that was perhaps, you know, it had melted, it had refrozen. You get that little icy chunk up top. You know, who's your perfect customer for this? Because that, you know, whether I'm shipping a $4 pint of ice cream versus a $4 million vial of medicine, there's a big difference there.
Yes, no, absolutely. I would say for us, you know, those manufacturers that care about the quality and condition, you know, of their products, we find that in the food spaces, right, it serves some of more of the high-end clientele. So, you know, you could think high-end meat, like could be a rancher that has a specialty ranch or a specialty farm. You could think like a really high-end seafood, halibut, salmon that has, you know, really strong price per pound values and really are strongly fished. And I think, you know, certainly industries like pharmaceutical, where, right, they're really high value, you know, assets around pharmaceutical goods. So I think those really serve as like our clients. And one of the things that we're interested in doing, I think, is really to unlock more of the commodity goods in the everyday food space. So our current system, you're right, is more designed, I would say, you know, to track a ribeye steak versus a carton of ice cream or a bag of potato chips. But ideally, and what we would like to see in the future is that as the cost of the technology continues to go down, that we're able to even unlock and tag those everyday commodity items that are still valuable to people and that, you know, we use every day.
So I think one of the things that we're, you know, in the computer space, is it Moore's law that says, look, every computing power is going to become twice as fast and take up half as much space over time. And I think there's a corollary that it'll cost half as much or whatever. Going back to the AirTag component here, the AirTag comparison, how big are the sensors you guys are using?
Yes. So we currently are leveraging some new technology that we've coined peel and stick, which allows us actually to take advantage of flexible electronics and flexible devices. And so what we're able to do is we're able to use various techniques, which people that are listening might be familiar with screen printing, probably more in a professional printing standpoint. But we can use similar processes to this to actually lay electronic materials and actually make electronic components and devices from these same processes that we traditionally assign to inks and more traditional printing on paper. We're now using systems that are similar to that to actually print out electronic sensors that have these ranging capabilities. And so we're able to take advantage of, we would say, decreasing cost of materials, but we're also meeting some engineering feats by being able to say, hey, how can you jam pack this much power? How can you create this type of functionality in a, you know, 2-inch by 1-inch, you know, kind of rectangle square sensor tags? And so that's kind of one of the things for us that's like new and emerging and cool in the space in terms of tracking.
So did I hear that correctly? Should I be thinking about you as sort of a modern day version or a more modern version of 3D printing out sensors for supply chain?
I would definitely think so. Yes, I would think in a way, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things is that, you know, with the new and emerging materials, we're able to cut down on costs. I would also say reduce waste, where we're able to rid these electronics of, you know, more traditional heavy metals like lead and cadmium, which go into a lot of more of our rigid electronics. So we're looking at new ways to introduce, you know, cleaner metals like zinc, which are more non-invasive. They're better for our climate as well as our marine ecosystems. And so, yes, in a lot of ways, we do think of that as kind of like this, the future of, I would say, of 3D printing, but also of just additive manufacturing is kind of one of the other words that we use in the space. But we do think of this as that, and being able to do it at volume is something that this process allows us to do.
Gotcha. Hey, Bradley, so let's say I've got some good in motion, we'll make it a heavier high value good. So my golf bag, which is very heavy but not at all high value, is moving to an event that I'm going to. You know, understanding this, how does the tag get power? How is the tag connected to whatever, you know, portal or whatever person on the back end is looking to make sure my golf bags are arriving on time so I can thoroughly go embarrass myself? You know, what's the system to provide connectivity?
Yes, great question. So in addition to our, you know, flexible tag hardware, we also have a data dashboard suite that allows our clients to directly interface with all their tags on a map. And this shows all the tags all over the world and those tags moving in real time. And what we're able to do, it uses a cloud service where we're able to kind of leverage that data in real time of, you know, position coordinate, temperature, you know, humidity, and these kind of functionality metrics. And it, you know, sends it directly, you know, through to our dashboard. And so this is something that is emerging, I would say, you know, in the supply chain space where, you know, several years ago, it was more around status updates, right, where, you know, something is being scanned into a port. It's scanned into the UPS or scanned into a FedEx facility. And what existed was a region in between that, this kind of in transport region or from shipper to shipper or distributor to distributor, where these gray zones began to exist. And, you know, different errors resulted from theft to loss. Goods would go out of condition and spoil. And so our ability to actually be able to see the in-between process also from, you know, distributor to distributor or supplier to supplier really allows us to mitigate those damages or theft or loss.
Got it. Now, are you relying on like 3G connectivity or 4G, or is this, does the sensor need to have a Wi-Fi connection? I'm trying, are you Starlink's, you know, most prime customer?
Yes, the I would say, you know, one of the things that we do kind of believe in as like the long-term vision, not only for our company, but I think for this connectivity around the world are programs like Starlink and others. There's a company, Satellite, that is in the UK that they've reached out to us a couple of times. But just to kind of give it for the listeners, so, you know, in terms of the communication protocols, Satellite is currently still the most cost prohibitive, so it's the most expensive. But the cost of Satellite is coming down as more right satellites are being thrown up there. This coverage will then be global. And the advantage of that is that emerging economies and, you know, young nations around the world will be able to take advantage of that and actually grow at a much faster rate than we could as the previous developing nations by just using, you know, more of our, you know, Wi-Fi based systems. Our current system leverages, it's a system similar to cellular connectivity, and we also use Bluetooth as well. And the reason that we've, and it's not that Bluetooth is necessarily the newest technology, but we find it to be the least invasive when working with clients and working around these facilities like shipyards, ports, et cetera, because it gives longer range than kind of traditional passive technologies like NFC or RFID.
Sure. So now if I heard that right, and if I extrapolate this, in addition to saying, hey, look, I can help you track your containers in a port, and I'm going to give you a portal to see where they are in the port, you're taking a step further and saying, we're going to help you build out connectivity. Now, folks that are listening may or may not know this. In the US, at least, the ports have the absolute worst connectivity available. Like, there is no 5G signal there. You're lucky to get 3 or 4G. And to folks who are thinking, well, why is that? Don't we need connectivity there? The reality is, if you're AT&T, if you're Verizon, nobody lives at the port. There's very little of an incentive to say, let me put repeaters, let me put infrastructure at the port. So Brantley, do I have it right? You're helping with both sort of the technology on the small side, the portal, but also you're saying we're gonna get things, I don't want to say hardwired, that's the wrong way to put it, but you're helping with the actual, I guess, the digital plumbing?
Yes, I would say so. Yes, and to a certain degree, it is a little inherent, I would say, to the platform to want to optimize there, because you know that is such an important core to really providing, you know, that traceability is, you know, how actually do you stand up, you know, a network. And the other thing I think that we find is that when we talk to our clients, this idea around what we consider to be our kind of like mesh networks, right? So it could be a group of goods. Let's say, for instance, it could be pallets or shipping containers that go together, where for many of our clients, being able to create these mesh networks with their assets has a really added value for them. And so I think that's what also originally got us thinking down that pathway in general is, you know, not only can we, you know, provide this cloud service and, you know, and wanting to leverage kind of the best communication protocols around, but can we create a mesh network for our clients where they're able to either sync goods together or getting products to talk together, that if, you know, maybe if one pallet is damaged, it can maybe alert the others, or the others were able to alert the whole or send out a signal. And so I think those type of things came from inspiration and conversations with clients.
Got it. Okay. What were you doing before this? What made you wake up one day and say, "Hey, I've got this crazy idea. I'm going to build, you know, a full solution here."
Yeah, I did want to give a shout out to my co-founder, Michael Couture, who isn't on the call with us today, but he and I think a little bit of our backgrounds, I'm a materials chemist by training. So I really fell in love, I think, with the material world and kind of what IoT devices could look like, or what their response or sensing capabilities could do. At this same time, he's a software engineer. And some of his background really started to, or interest, I think, started to kind of emerge around, you know, traceability and distributed ledger technologies, or what most people probably even more commonly are familiar with in 2024 is probably the term, you know, blockchain. This, though, however, was in 2018, where those type of terms, distributed ledger or blockchain technologies, were not at all, you know, household names. There was something that we were seeing emerging, I would say, in the connected devices space, where, for instance, the Ring doorbell and the Nest thermostat, those had really just become commercial products. And I would say those were really kind of in the Apple Watch really made up in the Fitbit. Those were kind of like the first wave of IoT products that were just these kind of household items. And we just thought it was so cool that, you know, this sensor or device sits somewhere and it's like, I can sit on my couch and I can, you know, turn the temperature up and down, or I can change the functionality, or if someone's at my door, you know, I can look at a camera, you know, just sitting here and see them or ring them in. And our curiosity really grew more and more around just at a high level, how to track and trace goods. And it led us to really understanding that that the counterfeit market is like over a billion dollar industry. And, you know, it was everything from salmon in the grocery store to Rolex watches to Jordan sneakers to aspirin pills. And we just thought that as a problem was touching on, you know, so many different day-to-day issues that just people face, right? It's like if they're spoofing our medicine and our foods, you know, like this is a big problem. And so I think that's what really kind of led us, you know, down that pathway. My, you know, career prior to this was as a chemist. And I think thinking about kind of raw materials and reagents in a laboratory made me think about, well, where does a supply chain begin? And like, what is that raw material good that may have to get shipped somewhere? And then it goes into you know, this mediary or tertiary in chemistry, we call it a tertiary product or intermediary product, right? And so that's like something sitting that's inside a distribution warehouse. And then, you know, a chemical reaction, it goes, it does this thing, right? And you get some product in the end. And that for us, you know, we think about that as like into its end destination. That might be a retail store or, you know, or some other pathway. And so I think that's where a lot of my kind of chemistry mind and materials background transitioned into what we were seeing in supply chains. And this was before 2020. And the pandemic became like a serendipity moment for our company, because we were hedging on supply chains transitioning in 2018 and 2019. And it went from, you know, even our family and friends would ask us, like, how the hell did you guys get in shipping or logistics? Like, you know, these are such unsexy spaces. Or how do you market this? Or who do you talk to there? Or, like, do you talk to truck drivers there? You know, there were these questions that we would get. And then, you know, it went from that to, you know, in 2021, you could turn on the State of the Union address and the President of the United States is discussing how we need to make our supply chains more resilient. And so in just a couple years' time, what was, you know, still this kind of esoteric and I think a kind of older industry and older words became really household and on the forefront of, you know, everything that we're seeing that's happening with our American economy right now is supply chain related.
Sure. Understood, man. Raj, what haven't I asked Brantley that that I should have? Let's hear a little peer review, my friend.
Mike, thank you for this opportunity. One thing that Brantley also pointed out is that the traditional tracking does work, but you have to push. Somebody has to push that notification to the desired party to know where the valuable goods are. Whereas with our solution, you can turn it on and forget. You'll be notified at the very instant that something should change that you care about. For instance, maybe the temperature of the product that you're moving across the state or even the nation, you want it to be at a certain temperature. You want to be notified before it gets bad. I remember an instance where we lost a truckload of goods because a truck caught fire. And you know, here you are, if we had this tracker in place, we would have known by the temperature signal that there's something wrong. We could have averted it. It not only resulted in the loss of the truck and the goods within the truck, but it also subsequently we had to deal with theft because the truck was under fire and it was somewhere around here in 118, on 118. So you can imagine, you know, the use case is huge and it can be applied to any kind of valuable goods that one person has a value attached to it. It could be, like you said, your golf clubs. It could be some antique piece someone has moving across wherever. I see there's a huge value in the solution. People will start to adopt it. They don't just see the value of it right now.
Yeah, I get you, man. Hey, so one of the questions, and I think you guys are really interesting to answer this one. One of the questions I try to bring every guest before I let them go from the show is, if you're talking to a new or recent college grad, and that kid walks over to you and says, I'm thinking about supply chain, what's the piece of advice you give them? Brantley, I'll have you go first.
I would tell them to read about TSMC.
TSMC.
Yes.
And what does that stand for?
TSMC is Taiwan Semiconductor. And this is the largest semiconductor manufacturer in the world. And so it's an amazing company to learn about just from a supply chain perspective. You know, how does the largest semiconductor in the world. How does that company grow and scale from Taiwan, you know, nowhere near one of the largest countries in the world? But the semiconductors that are produced are going into all of the tablets, cars, AI machines, everything that we're currently using now in the future, these semiconductor components are going into those. And in terms of understanding global logistics and global trade, there's a bit of, right, if you look at like in the South China Sea, there's a bit of trade conflict that's really around who has access to these semiconductors between China, the U.S., Russia, you know, these other larger nations. And so understanding how trade around the company TSMC, I think that will give many insights into global logistics moving forward here. So I would tell a student who's coming out of school to be abreast of what's happening in the South China Sea and understanding a company like Taiwan Semiconductor and what it means to the global stage.
Got it, man. That's a great piece of advice. We get a lot of, you know, be curious or whatever, which is all also good advice, but I like that, you were super tangible on that one for me. Raj, what about you?
You know, Mike, supply chain is integral to our lives. Anything we touch has been manufactured somewhere and brought to us. And if you go back to our COVID era, you can tell how pivotal it was for our supply chain to be very efficient and not break down at any cost at any given point in time. You know, if they realize this, I think supply chain is a beautiful field to be in. It's a very, 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 very integral part of our lives.
Gentlemen, I appreciate you joining me so much. They are Brantley and Raj from Lamar IoT. Brantley, if somebody wants to get in touch, how do they find you?
You all can find me. I'm primarily, I would say, on LinkedIn, Brantley Fulton on LinkedIn. bfulton@lamar.global is my email address. Feel free to reach out if you're a potential client interested in learning about our business. Investor with deep pockets. If you're here in the local LA area and want to chat, I'm available. Hit me up there. I would like to, if I can, just give a few shout outs to some of our sponsors and people that make things go at Lamar. I thank my team, but I would like to thank folks at Braid Theory as well as at Lacey, the Los Angeles Clean Tech Incubator. We're currently in the building here. This is our main hub located in downtown LA. We have some space with Braid Theory down at Alta C at the Port of LA in San Pedro. So we're very thankful for those folks as well for giving us opportunities.
Love that, man. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for being on Hammer Down. To all our listeners, we appreciate you guys. Thanks all.